Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
FedEx pilots picketing today at the main hub in Memphis, Tennessee. And on the show today, the latest from the heat and frost insulators, and we check in with the Maine Labor Climate Council. Welcome to the Wednesday, May 24th edition of America's Workforce, where we're available on at least six platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. Pete Almeny will be our first guest on the show today, longtime supporter of America's Workforce. He serves as executive director of the International Association of Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers, LMCT. That's the Labor Management Trust, Mechanical Insulators, LMCT.com. And Pete's going to give us an update on the Federal Mechanical Insulation Bill. Now, this is legislation that was introduced in the last Congress, didn't get anywhere, so they are trying to reintroduce it. But at this juncture, they're gathering support. They want to make sure they have bipartisan support. And it's my understanding they have a Republican from Texas who has offered his verbal support to introduce the bill. That's certainly good news. Also, they want to reintroduce a mechanical insulation tax credit, which would be an incentive to use insulation. So it'll save you money down the road. Makes a whole lot of sense. Pete's also going to address potential labor shortages and the importance of getting young people into the trades. And he's going to reflect on his career and how he got involved in the trades. He wasn't planning on going into the trades, but it's an interesting journey, and he'll reflect on that journey and how important it is for young people, especially those that have served in the military. We're approaching the Memorial Holiday weekend, and I know right now there's a lot of vets that are looking for work. Great opportunity. Helmets to Hard Hats is one organization that can make that connection, and Pete will talk about that. Later in the show, we're going to go to the state of Maine and join Francis Eanes. Now, Francis is with the Maine Labor Climate Council, where he serves as executive director. Website is mainelaborclimate.org, and they're a coalition of about 20 unions and other labor organizations. And what we're going to talk about is the transition from fossil fuel energy to wind, solar, alternative energy. And I know there's been some infighting on this over the years, but the good news is this. They are organizing right now to advance two very critical pieces of legislation that, if passed, would create an abundance of clean energy and thousands of good union jobs for decades to come. A lot of this has to do with offshore wind, which is huge in the state of Maine. So Francis will be our second guest on the show. And now, a labor update from our good folks at Boyd Watterson Asset Management. You can find more at boydwatterson.com. FedEx pilots picketing today at the Maine Air Hub. This was in Memphis, Tennessee, following a 99% strike authorization vote. The airline, by the way, just celebrated its 50th anniversary, while its pilots were saying their original philosophy has changed. Their original philosophy was people, service, and profits. Now it's the other way around. It's profit, service, people last. The strike authorization vote sent an undeniable message to flight management that we are ready to go the distance up to and including exercising our rights to self-help, a strike under the Railway Labor Act to secure a contract that reflects the value we bring. That came from the head of the Pilots Council, Captain Chris Norman. The talks, by the way, have been going on for 2 years. So there's a lot of frustration among FedEx pilots. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Pete Almeny on behalf of the Heat and Frost Insulators.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
We're the nurses, firefighters, and claims representatives that help keep our government services running. We respond to natural disasters. We care for our nation's veterans. And we investigate discrimination in the workplace. We are federal and D.C. government workers. And we are proud to serve the American people. Working in more than 70 agencies across the government, we know we can fulfill our mission because our union has our back. Learn more at AFGE.org. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees, AFL-CIO. You're listening to America's Workforce, and this next segment brought to you by the North Coast Labor Federation.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy,
and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
America's Workforce is presented by the Laborers International Union of North America. Feel the power right now at liuna.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. Real simple, AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next portion of the show, sponsored by iMed, switching to Managed Vision Care may save your fun money and deliver a better experience. So here's what you do. Go to iMed.com, E-Y-E-M-E-D, iMed.com/union, and you will learn a whole lot more. All right, let's go to the state of New Jersey and welcome one of our longtime supporters here, and that would be Mr. Peter Almini. Pete is the executive director of the International Association of Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers, their Labor Management Trust, Mechanical Insulators, LMCT.com. And if you've been listening for the last couple of months, Pete's been talking about this federal mechanical insulation bill. It's not easy to get legislation, good legislation passed in Congress, but you just got to be persistent, very persistent. Pete Almini, brother, how are we doing today in Jersey?
Hey, how you doing today?
I'm doing great. Okay, we're approaching the holiday weekend here, and got to ask you, with the political divide, and obviously everybody is concerned about this debt ceiling right now, and rightly so. We're hearing all kind of scary scenarios that may pan out if the deadline is not reached on some kind of an agreement. But what's going on with this piece of legislation that makes a whole lot of sense here? Maybe you can explain what it's all about to our listeners. Pete, it's all yours. Go ahead, brother.
Well, I have to admit, as a layman, it is very frustrating to be able to get legislation passed and presented into Congress. But nevertheless, you said the word persistency before, and that's the key word that we have to stay focused on. And that's what it's all about when it's coming to our federal mechanical insulation bill, is persistency. We do have We do have Congressman Weber from Texas. He's a Republican, and he likes our bill, and looks like he's going to be the original co-signer of that bill, along with our mechanical insulation champion, Congresswoman Linda Sanchez. And what we're trying to do is, what we are doing, actually, is generating support before the bill is introduced, so that when the bill is introduced, it's going to hit the floor running. And we're working on both sides of the aisle. We definitely had the support of the Democrat side, and we're getting support from the Republican side because the bill actually makes sense. It's a small bill. You know, we hear on the news, you know, Congress has to rifle through bills and acts that are thousands of pages long. This bill that we're looking to pass is only 2.5 pages, and it's relatively small. It makes sense. And what it's doing is recognizing the fact of the importance of mechanical insulation and the evaluation of that to be included in existing federal regulations, that when we look at the energy efficiency of buildings, is that we include the terminology and the evaluation of mechanical insulation. And it's low-hanging fruit, but what we have to be able to do is navigate through the political jungle and to be able to do it right and to be able to have this thing that's going to have bipartisan support. We could have introduced a bill all the way back in January, but it only would have had Democratic support, and it just would have laid there and probably gone nowhere to get anything passed. And that's the way this great country works. You have to have consensus from all different points of view. And we've vetted this out through various Congress's offices, whether it be Democrat and Republican, and I've heard nothing but positive responses on it, and we just have to go through the procedures of introducing it and getting the support of the Energy and Commerce Committee, which I will be testifying soon, whether it be hopefully next month. I was originally told it was going to be 2 weeks ago, but that got pushed back a little bit, and that's fine. That's the way things are. But I'm looking forward to testifying in front of the subcommittee to be able to advocate this bill that makes sense. That's going to be beneficial for the taxpayers of this country. Energy efficiency with mechanical insulation.
Right. Well, we'll get into the details of the bill, but I have to ask you, it sounds like you're getting some verbal commitments. Here's the scary part, Pete. What they say and what they do could be very, very different. And I'm just wondering, how many do we need to get on paper to say, okay, it's time to go? I mean, do we need 15? We need 20? We need 30? Do we have a number on that?
Well, we need the majority of the, once it's introduced, we need the majority of the E&C committee. And that's going to be roughly about 15. We need 15 people from the E&C committee to be able to endorse this.
Okay.
And once it's endorsed with the majority of the committee, then it'll get introduced to the larger body of the House.
Gotcha.
And that's when we're at the plate. And, you know, we're going to be talking a lot about it at that point to be able to generate a tremendous amount of publicity to be able to get this thing passed. And I think once people see it, whether they're a politician or whether they're just a taxpayer, it makes sense. And it's not even a bill that's going to cost the government anything. It's just going to be raising the awareness of it and making it part of a complete energy audit of a building. And mm-hmm. it has to have the recognition.
It's my understanding that this legislation would require all federal construction projects to have a U.S. Department of Labor registered apprenticeship program. Now, that is probably part of the issue in the sell, because when you say registered apprenticeship program, you think union. And you know, Pete, there's some folks in Washington that don't like that, but I want you to explain that's not necessarily the case, right?
That's exactly the case, and thank you, Flesh, for bringing this subject matter up. And you're 110% correct. As soon as people hear registered apprenticeship, they say, oh, my God, that's something that's for the unions. And there's no doubt about it that the majority of apprentices in the construction industry come from the union sector. However, that necessarily does not have to be the case. You can have a merit shop, a merit employer, or a non-union, if you will. They can apply, and they can have an apprenticeship program that's going to be registered by the U.S. Department of Labor. It doesn't have to be a union. Now, many employers do not choose to have an apprenticeship program because it's going to cost money. It's going to cost a lot of money to have one that's reputable.
Right.
You have to have a curriculum. You have to have proof that you have a curriculum. That's going to require research, and it's going to require the funding to make it legitimate. You have to have instructors. You have to have the credentials for the instructors. You have to have record keeping. You're going to have the investment in a classroom and equipment and the tools needed to present a program. There are reputable apprenticeship programs that are with credible non-union employers. And these non-union employers that invest in their workforce understand the value of proper training, just as the unions do. We understand, as the unions, the value of training our workers and our workforce. And we're not alone with that. We have non-union employers. The same non-union employer who's going to invest in their workforce and have a registered apprenticeship program, typically you're going to have decent wages and high wages for their workers. They want to be able to have the retention for their workforce as well, just as the unions do. And they're going to be taking care of their employees. They're going to probably have health care packages. They probably have some sort of investment program for their retirement, for an example, a 401k. I don't know. But an employer who's going to care about their employees and care about the retention of it and care about their customers and their clients are going to value the importance of having a valuable workforce. And whether it be union or non-union, the way to go is to be able to have a registered apprenticeship program to be able to train their workforce. And you're able, and any employer that has that, there's going to be more work opportunities because on federal-funded projects, the federal government is going to require that you're going to have a registered apprenticeship program and be able to use apprentices.
I got some notes from the last time you and I talked about how many buildings there are that are federal buildings, and I got the number of 355,000 federal buildings.
Yep.
That's a lot. Do we have any idea how many jobs that's going to create once this becomes law? I'm being real optimistic here. Do we have any data on that yet, Pete?
Well, some of the data that we have based on independent studies that were done. It easily can be well over 100,000 jobs. 100,000 jobs just to address the 10 to 30% of mechanical insulation that's missing in most buildings.
So wow.
100,000 jobs, that's putting a lot of people to work.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Good jobs, too. Pete Almeany, yep, joining us on our live line today on behalf of the Heat and Frost Insulators Labor Management Trust, where he serves as Executive Director, Mechanical Insulators, LMCT.com is the website. There is more to this. We're going to talk about reintroducing the Mechanical Insulation Tax Credit. Also, Pete's going to address the labor shortages, potential labor shortages out there, and also reflect on the upcoming Memorial Holiday weekend. Later in the show, we're going to go to the state of Maine and check out the Maine Labor Climate Council. And their executive director, Francis Eames, will be joining us. Back in a few minutes, you're listening to America's Workforce.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org. cwa.org.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America. You can find more at cwa-union.org.
From the Golden Gate Bridge to the St. Louis Gateway Arch, the Sears Tower, and just about every building, bridge, and structure in between, our cities and towns wouldn't be the same without ironworkers. With over 3,000 contractors employing more than 130,000 highly trained ironworkers and 20,000 apprentices, the Ironworkers Union stands ready and able to shape the future of our skylines. Learn more at ironworkers.org. Ironworkers, the sky's the limit.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Heat and Frost Insulators Labor Management Cooperative Trust. Find out more at insulators.org/LMCT.
You'd like to upgrade your fund's vision care, but you need to roll back the clock on the cost. Roll it back to the 70s. iMed offers members 76% average savings versus retail on eye exams, glasses, and contacts. Enjoy similar benefits to an indemnity plan, but with consistent savings and a better experience. Endorsed by the National Labor Alliance, iMed takes a consultative approach to tailor your vision insurance benefits. Learn more at iMed.com/union. Figures based on client data. Visit iMed.com/union for more details.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Steelworkers. You can find more at usw.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And remember, you can check us out on at least six platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Pandora, and Stitcher. And when you get an opportunity, just sign up and receive our shows on a regular basis and give us a rating. We always appreciate those five-star ratings. And remember this, if you like a show, share the show. Because our sponsors, like the Heat and Frost Insulators, we're talking to Pete Almini on behalf of the Mechanical Insulators Trust right now. They want to know how well the show is doing. Well, I can report we're doing pretty good. Right now, 49 out of 50 states are listening to America's Workforce. We also have 11 countries that are listening. In Canada, Canada's number one. 9 of the 12 provinces are downloading America's Workforce. That's the beauty of podcasting. We're only 3 years into podcasting, and we've got some incredible numbers. And right now, we are in the top 10% of podcasts in the world. So we're pretty darn proud of that. A lot of that has to do with the great guests like Pete Almini. Let's go back to Pete Almini. Pete, I figured you'd like to hear those numbers here because we want to spread the good word about what's going in organized labor and all the unions and the AFL-CIO. It's so important. There's a lot of good organizing going on, and we want to make sure that people know what kind of legislation. We talked in the first segment about the Mechanical Insulation Act. It was introduced in the last Congress. It's going to be introduced into this one, and at this juncture, Pete is trying to get as many supporters on both sides of the aisle. It's very important we be bipartisan on this. And make this happen because it's going to create, as he indicated, at least 100,000 jobs. We're talking insulating federal buildings. Now, Pete, I understand there's a tax credit that you're trying to add. And apparently this was in the previous legislation, or apparently it was in the Build Back Better bill, and it was taken out. Can you explain what's going on here, Pete?
Sure. But first, I want to congratulate you, Flash, and your team, and it's great news to hear about how the podcasts are expanding through different states and other countries. And I'm going to take some credit on that as well, because it just goes to show how people want to hear more about mechanical insulation. And the word is getting out, and I'm glad I'm able to share that with you and your listeners.
Well, thank you.
On the tax credit or tax incentive, we had a bill that was introduced all the way back to 2009, and it kind of refers to what I was talking about before, the importance of bipartisan support. And we didn't have bipartisan support. We had a plethora of Democratic support on the mechanical insulation tax incentive bill. And it just sat there. It didn't do anything. It never really got out of committee. It just was an existing bill. We had signers and co-signers, but it didn't really ever have any traction with legs on its own. The language was put into that massive bill that was introduced 2 years ago, Build Back Better. It got pushed into some fine print within the bill and never saw the light of day after that. And then Build Back Better was cut, and it was the majority of it was used. I shouldn't say even the majority of it. Some of it was used for the massive infrastructure bill, but a lot of it didn't go anywhere, and it kind of like died in Build Back Better. We want to be able to introduce that bill as a standalone bill again where it was, and I like to think we're a little bit smarter and a little bit more aware of what has to be done. And this would be an incentive to be able for a building owner, whether it be a federal building or whether it be a privately owned building or facility, to make improvements with the mechanical insulation, and then in turn to be able to receive a break on their taxes. And it does have a price tag to it, because the federal government would see less revenue based on the taxes, but it can be proven that the federal government and the taxpayers' money and the funding, it's going to recoup that money in less than 2 years and be an advocate to be able to save money in the future. Mm-hmm. So when the term incentive is used, that's what it's all about. It's an incentive. The real money is going to be saved on the fuel costs and the energy costs. That's going to be returned on the investment within 2 years. So we're looking to reintroduce that with the latest excitement about energy and conservation of energy and the fight with fossil fuel. It has a new life to it, and we're looking to be a little bit smarter with it, and we're gathering support to reintroduce a mechanical insulation tax incentive bill.
Makes a whole lot of sense. The old line, you can pay me now or pay me later. So the more you put up on the front end, you're going to get a better return on the back end, and that's exactly how mechanical insulation works. I want to switch gears here a little bit, Pete. Let's talk about, there's a lot of organizing going on, especially trying to get into the non-union sector. And a lot of that is of concern because of labor shortages. We're hearing a lot of companies saying, boy, we need more workers. I know a lot of the apprenticeship programs are doing the best they can. A lot of the outreach into the high schools, but still there's that push for kids to go to college. I'm just wondering how you see the future shaping out on all this, Pete.
Well, it's something that's near and dear to my heart as the apprentice coordinator of my local 32 out of New Jersey. I was 20 years as the apprentice coordinator, and it was my pet project to be able to promote apprenticeship programs and get the word out to today's youths about the availability of it. When I went to school, there was no talk about apprenticeship programs. The only talk and the only push was for students to go into college. And it was kind of even just overshadowing what was really important. It was go to college.
Right.
I played football. I was good at it in high school until I blew my shoulder out. And I thought I was going to go to college because, to me at the time when I was 16 years old, I thought college is a place to extend my football career. And when I blew my shoulder out, well, my football career was over. And I wasn't going to go to college. And I remember my guidance counselor said, well, what do you want to do now, Pete? You're not going to college to play football. You got to do whatever. I said, my dad was in construction. I like construction, like building things. I think I want to get into construction. And he almost yelled at me. He says, construction? He says, you have good grades. Your SAT scores are high. You can relatively go any place that you want. I said, no, I want to go in construction. And, I didn't realize it as much then because I was just a kid, but the older I got, that got me angry. Why was my guidance counselor He wasn't guiding me for anything other than going to college, because I found out that the guidance counselor in the school district, they get points awarded and they get credit. They get bonuses for the amount of kids that they push into college. And that's may be fine. But I think it's important that our society is able to have truthful facts. There are other ways of being successful with someone's career other than going to college. And apprenticeship programs is one of the ways. And I'm listening to the news. I'm listening to the radio and other podcasts. And more people are talking about the advantages of going into a construction union apprenticeship program because of the benefits and the rate of pay. And it's catching on to mainstream. Other people are realizing this. And if you, I found it interesting, the gentleman, Mike Rowe, many people know him. He's the guy that did the TV show Dirty Jobs. And,
right.
And he's become an advocate for the working class. He has a program, and he's able to give out $1 million a year to help people go into apprenticeship programs. He was just on the news. I just saw him last week. And he's an advocate, and he's a celebrity now. But he's talking about the benefits of being able to go to an apprenticeship program as opposed to college. And the benefits are immense. And this is not 1965 where you go to college, you get a degree, you'll get to get a job, and you got to work in that job for 30 years, get a gold watch, and you retire. Those days are that's 50 years ago. And I know a lot of people, including my colleagues, that went to college and still don't have a job.
Yeah.
And there's no guarantee for anything. And you walk into an employer, you say, hey, I got a college degree. They go, yeah, so what does that mean? It doesn't. And I'm not saying that college is a bad thing. All I'm saying is that college is not an immediate ticket for success. And there are other ways to be successful other than going to college. And 40% of students who enroll in college will drop out in the first year. Where are these workers going? Where are these people going to go to get a good career that offers benefits?
40%. Wow, I didn't know that number was that high. And imagine that. I mean, look at the cost of college. You mentioned 1965, and college back then was nothing. Nothing compared to what it is today. It's probably gone up 1,000%, at least 1,000% since then. So you add in all that college debt, and then you're scratching your head wondering, why did I even go in this direction? So it just doesn't make any sense. But good point. I love the I love what you talked about with your dad and how you got into the field that you're in now. A couple minutes left here on the show. I know you want to talk about, we're going into the holiday weekend. I know you want to talk about Memorial Day, the importance of Memorial Day. And also maybe you could weave in, there's a great program, and we've had them on the show many, many times, Helmets to Hard Hats. And we're talking about our folks that served in the military. And I'll tell you, you learn a whole lot in the military. And if you don't learn a lot, you're not going to last in the military. It's just that important that that you get the skills that you have accomplished throughout the time that you're serving our country. And then you make that transition to private life. And there's a great opportunity right in the trades. So I would imagine with the heat and frost insulators, you got a lot of vets that are involved. Is that the case, Pete?
Yes, and that's one of the aspects that we're cranking it up even more than we have before, is looking for veterans to be able to enter the building trades. And of course, we want them to enter the Mechanical Insulators Union, but this goes beyond our selfish goals. It goes on to any veteran. We'd like to be able to get them involved in any of our building trades, whether it be electrician, carpenter, painter, roofer. I don't want to list all 14 of them, but also as an insulator. And it's so important to be able to make the awareness of our returning veterans that these opportunities exist for them. Now, we can teach almost anything to someone who wants to learn. the trade, whether it be insulation, whether it be electricity, whether it be roofing. We can teach anybody anything. One thing we cannot teach is a work ethic. We can't teach people how to get up in the morning, be ready to go at 7 o'clock or 6 o'clock, and to have the fundamentals to be able to do a hard job and to have some pride in doing that. And our military branches do a wonderful job of, one, recruiting people to be able to do that. And we like to be able to get people that are in the services because they come ready to work. They come having a work ethic that's been established. They understand the value of getting up in the morning and being ready to go. They understand the value of being prepared. They understand the value of getting the job done. And they also understand, and when you listen to a veteran and when you listen to what they talk about, they enjoy coming into the apprenticeship program. They enjoy coming into a union because they get that sense of teamwork that they had in the military, the sense of belonging.
Right.
And there's a tremendous amount of bond and camaraderie that goes along being in the military. And when they work other places, they have a difficult time of finding that. When they get into a building trade construction union, they feel that bond. They feel that brotherhood and sisterhood that they had in the military. And it's very comforting for them. And they typically value being part of a team. And gosh, that's, as an employer or as a union, that's the type of workers that we're looking for. It's very difficult to find a young man or woman that want to be able to work, don't mind getting dirty, don't mind working with their hands and waking up in the morning and ready to go and being prepared and be able to work 5 days a week or sometimes even more. And it's very hard to find that. We welcome the opportunity to be able to get the military personnel when they finish their tour of duty to get involved with the building trades. And when you see so many homeless veterans, I always wonder to myself, gee, are they aware of the fact of we need these people to come into the trade that's going to be able to help our potential labor shortage that we're going to have. And one of the new initiatives that we always, well, let me back up a little bit. We work very closely with Helmets to Hard Hats, which is a program designed to be able to recruit veterans into the building trades. And we've been involved with Helmets to Hard Hats since the inception. And to my knowledge, it's at least 15 years ago. One of the things that they are branching out with the new initiatives is they also want to make not just the opportunities to enter the union as a worker, they also want to make the opportunities available to a veteran for possible management with the construction company itself as the firm. And that's one of the newer initiatives that I like to be able to promote to our veterans is that, you know, there's also opportunities to work in management in the construction industry, and the skill sets and their ethics that they have are going to be very valuable to that in within the management portion of a construction company.
That's great what they're doing, and I'm glad you brought that up because we're going to have to get them back on the show because they are moving in the right direction. HelmetsToHardHats.org is their website. All right, we have to button up the show. We are going into the holiday weekend, the Memorial Holiday weekend. I know you wanted to say a few words about the importance of this weekend. Pete, go ahead.
Yes, thank you, and I'll be short. As we all know, we're going to be entering the Memorial weekend, and that's the kickoff to summer. The Indianapolis 500 and barbecues, hot dogs, hamburgers, and summertime fun, and car sales too. But, you know, we're kicking off the summer and everyone's going to be excited about it. And I just ask everybody just to take a few moments of your day and look up and try to find American flag and in your prayers and say thank you for the great country that we live in and thank And thank God for all the servicemen and women over centuries that have believed in this country and made the ultimate sacrifice so we can celebrate a weekend such as this where we celebrate our freedom and we enjoy the fruits and the labor of the greatest country in the world. It didn't come easy, and a lot of people have sacrificed that for us to be able to celebrate Memorial Day. Keep remembering what Memorial Day is about. Have that hot dog, have that hamburger, have that beer. But look up at that American flag and say thank you and appreciate the men and women who gave us the greatest sacrifice they could. Thank you.
Amen, brother. Pete Almeni on behalf of the International Association of Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers, LMCT. That's a labor management trust. Mechanical Insulators. LMCT.com is our website. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to link up with Francis Eanes of the Maine Labor Climate Council. Back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialists, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at boydwatterson.com.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Auto Workers. Find more at uaw.org.
Union members need to be heard. Reliable and convenient union voting has never been more important than it is now. Make voting easy for your membership by working with Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS offers encrypted and monitored solutions that ensure your elections are accurate and accessible for every member through mail-in, online, and in-person voting. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com and take the next step in getting secure and auditable elections.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Iron Workers. You can find more at ironworkers.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. Real simple, AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the Ohio Federation of Teachers. You can find more at oh.aft.org. Let's go to the state of Maine right now. And joining us on line number two is Francis Eanes. Francis is the executive director of the Maine Labor Climate Council. Website is mainelaborclimate.org. Francis serves as the executive director. And briefly, the Climate Council is a coalition of 20 unions and labor organizations. I'm sure Francis will give us some more on that. Francis, welcome to America's Workforce. Talk to me a little bit about this this Climate Council. Sounds pretty interesting. Maybe you can give us some details. Go ahead.
You bet. It's great to be with you. We are a coalition, as you said, of 20 labor unions and other councils of labor unions here in Maine. And our whole reason for being is to help the labor movement in Maine and beyond develop a vision and a program of action on climate change. We know this is real, this giant transformational energy revolution is happening. And it's happening whether we want it to or not, and it is up to us as working people, as the labor movement, as individual labor unions, to lean in and help shape this transition so that it actually works for working people. We know there's nothing inherent about a green job or a clean energy job that makes it a good job. And so it's up to us as the labor movement to ensure that that happens. And so we fight every day through campaigns at the state level and the local level to help make this happen at the pace and scale that we need and make it an actually just transition for working people in Maine and beyond.
How long have you been in existence, Francis?
We launched just over a year ago. We've had conversations among our affiliate unions for a couple of years prior to that. But we are fairly new.
Was there some pushback? Because, you know, there's some people that don't believe in climate change right now. And I'm just wondering, was this kind of difficult to get started?
You know, there certainly is resistance to climate issues all over the place. But you know what? Our message from the beginning has been very simple. We are not here to change hearts and minds about believing in climate change. In fact, there are union members that I talk to every day who may not be fully decided on the climate science. That, frankly, to us is less important than the fact that this energy transition is happening. It's happening in our state. It's happening in our communities. It's happening, frankly, across the country and across the world. And I think our members deeply understand because they see it every day with the explosion of solar and other forms of renewable energy that it's happening and that it's an opportunity for us to make these really good union jobs top to bottom as we're building out whole new industries, whether it's solar, whether it's offshore wind, whether it's all of the energy efficiency and retrofit jobs. And we see the choice in front of us every day because most of those jobs that are coming as part of this energy transition are being created in the old model or even in some of the newer models of temp work without the kind of apprenticeship and pre-apprenticeship and high quality training and careers that we know unions, especially in the building trades, provide. And so the choice for our members and for our affiliate unions is pretty simple. And we frame that every day. When I talk to apprentices, I let them know, I don't care where you are on climate change. Frankly, we don't even have to talk about the climate for you to get involved in helping to make work in good quality, long duration work for you and for your fellow brothers and sisters in your local for decades to come. So that's the winning message. We see union members respond. And when they get involved, it turns out a lot of them actually come along and have changes of hearts and minds around the climate question. But that's not where we start.
Yeah, it seems industry is farther ahead than a lot of the politics and all this. I mean, take a look at the auto industry. They're all going toward EV production, and they're going big, too. They're investing billions of dollars. But, you know, let's talk about your state. And when I think about Maine, I think about a whole lot of coastline. And you touched on offshore wind. That's got to be pretty explosive right now, Francis. Can you give us some insight on how big that industry is right now?
So we're just at the beginning on a lot of these new energy systems, and offshore wind is a good case in point. If we were to build offshore wind at scale, we can relatively and reasonably expect to power more than half, up to 100% of Maine's electricity needs from a renewable source like offshore wind. We have some of the strongest and most consistent winds blowing off of our shore here in the Gulf of Maine. But if we're going to tap into those, and I think we should, and there's all kinds of good reasons that we should, there's union members across the state who are excited to build and maintain and operate these new facilities. If we're going to do that, we need to do it in a way that works for working people who make their livelihoods on the water. We have one of the longest coastlines in the country and one of the largest and oldest and densest commercial fisheries. Our lobster industry is iconic across the world, and we're not in the business here at the Maine Labor Climate Council or at the Maine AFL-CIO of putting anybody out of work. And as we talk about a just transition, we need to both always hold together the opportunity that comes from building out new energy systems like offshore wind and the amazing transformational potential of thousands of good union jobs in manufacturing, construction, operation, maintenance, maritime in a state like Maine. We need to hold that together always at the same time with protecting the livelihoods of our brothers and sisters who make a living out in the water and have for generations. And we know these two can coexist, and we have legislation right now that would show a path-breaking opportunity to have a win-win solution by pushing these offshore wind projects far enough offshore that they are out of the prime fishing grounds, away from the prime fishing grounds of our lobster and scallop and herring and other ground fisheries.
I know the lobster fishermen are organized, and they're with the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers. We did a couple of shows on them in years past, but you mentioned some legislation here. Can you give us some insight on what this legislation is and what it will create if it's passed?
Yeah, so we have two really exciting pieces of legislation that are being considered by our legislature as we speak and could get votes in the Senate and the House here in Maine as early as next week. One, together, both are transformational, foundational pieces that would catalyze a responsible offshore wind industry here in Maine with thousands of good-paying union jobs. One piece of legislation is an offshore wind procurement, which directs our Public Utilities Commission, who regulates all of our energy systems, to solicit proposals for offshore wind generation facilities from offshore wind developers over the next 10 years. And what that would do is effectively tell offshore wind developers there will be demand, there will be buyers for the energy you are creating. It creates a really important market signal to catalyze this industry. The other piece of legislation we have, which just got a favorable vote out of committee yesterday, is to build an offshore wind port. Can't have offshore wind. You can't build these enormous, really amazing structures that go out in the water and float 15,000 ton hulls unless you have unique port facilities, lay down yards, the assembly areas, manufacturing facilities for batch concrete, for blades, nacelles, wind turbine generators, all of the components that go into these novel, large pieces of infrastructure. And so we need to build both a port and we need to have the demand for the power. And these two pieces of legislation together do just that. And if passed, and we have a favorable pathway to do so, would create an offshore wind industry here in Maine, make Maine one of the leaders in floating offshore wind, and do so from the ground up, from the get-go, with good union jobs, as close to wall as we can. That's unprecedented. That's a really exciting opportunity, and Maine union members have been involved from the start in making these pieces of legislation happen.
That's great.
And just to add on here for a moment, the relationship you mentioned with the organized lobstermen with the International Association of Machinists has been critical. And that relationship, labor to labor, fisheries to building and construction trades, workers, and our Building Trades Council, our Maine Labor Climate Council, that has been critical to keeping these pieces of legislation on track. There is a long and very understandable conflict, and this is true not just in Maine, between fisheries and proponents of offshore wind, and that remains. We are not here to tell fishermen, don't worry, everything's going to be okay. We need to prove that. We need to show that. And the way we do it is by walking hand in hand with them, step by step, as we pass pieces of legislation like we have. And I'm incredibly proud of the work that we've done to get their support for this legislation, even as they remain very rightfully skeptical of what offshore wind would do. But it's by forging partnerships and compromise in critical pieces of legislation like we have, that we begin to build the trust that we know we're going to need if we want to actually get through this climate crisis together in one piece.
It's funny you bring that up, because the last conversation we had on that issue with the fishermen, that issue was front and foremost. They were very, very concerned with what was going on with groups like yourselves. So it's good that you seem to be working out the details. You, Francis, you know this is not an easy path. You're trying to move forward, but in the process, somebody's going to get ticked off and somebody's going to get hurt and probably their job might be lost. So I understand that whole situation, but you got to work together for the common good. Francis Eanes, Executive Director of the Maine Labor Climate Council. Website is mainelaborclimate.org, and you can also check them out on Facebook, Maine Labor Climate Council. Please keep us abreast of the situation over there. We could do another show in the next coming weeks, okay?
Delighted to. Thank you.
All right, that'll be it for another edition of America's Workforce. Tomorrow, we're going to check in with the Government Affairs Director of the AFL-CIO and the Coalition for a Prosperous America. Until then, all of you have a safe, and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.